This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with Unwired LA. We're about to speak to Rich Grimes, who's the Executive Vice President and Investment Committee Chairman at Wireless Capital Partners. Welcome to Unwired LA.
Thank you. Nice to have the opportunity to speak with you.
You've been appointed by Mayor Hahn to serve on his broadband executive panel to examine the role of broadband technologies, in particular in accelerating economic development in the city. How did you come to be appointed to this board?
Well, awareness from my background, I was with AT&T Wireless for close to 9 years, handling their network, national network real estate strategy and implementation, and several other national and regional roles. And my business group's contact with the City of Los Angeles, we've came in contact with the mayor's office and various of his deputy mayors on several initiatives
and
for
what
deployment.
What is tell us a little bit about Wireless Cable Capital Partners.
We're a real estate and financial services company,
right?
Strategically focused on telecom and acquiring or purchasing leased assets underlying wireless communication facilities. So essentially buying cell site leases and switch leases.
Okay. What are those? Tell us just a little bit more about that. I didn't really know much that there was a market in this until I looked at your site. What's involved? Who ends up, which landlords end up having these cell sites to lease or to work with you to monetize?
Well, it's across the board. It could be independent landlords. It could be large developers. It could be municipalities. Those that have wireless communication sites on them, be it roof mounts that are on the roofs or the parapets, or towers that are located on the property, be it parking lot or some partial of that.
Do these properties end up being that way because service providers spot them and
yes.
see that these are advantageous positions and go and talk to them and say, we'd like to lease the space on your building as a possible site for one of our towers?
That's correct. The genesis of it is that a search ring is developed by the wireless carrier to achieve an RF objective to provide either coverage for a given area that's underserved or to provide capacity for a site that an area that has a lot of mobile traffic that is being overloaded in its current site.
Now, a lot. If I were to picture, if I were to look at a map or a view from space of Los Angeles, are most of the good spots taken, or do new cellular and Wi-Fi and WiMAX locations sort of manifest themselves when new technologies are developed?
Well, twofold. One is that the network, from a coverage standpoint, there's a long ways to go, as anyone can attest to that has a mobile phone,
right.
That there's coverage in certain areas and not others.
Right.
And that's, so there's still a great need for a coverage in various areas. Topography has a big impediment to that challenge because a site has to see another site in order for there to be coverage.
Right.
The other dynamic is capacity, where you already have coverage in a given area, but because the usage is reached at such a high demand,
right.
that it essentially maxes out that site that is otherwise serving that coverage area.
Right.
So you have to infill that site with other sites to offload that capacity requirement.
Right. Could you give us some examples of those overloaded or previously overloaded sites that work that way?
Well, it happens almost anywhere, but typically in your major thoroughfares,
right.
Your freeways, some of your more strategic public and private venues.
Sort of Wilshire and Olympic Boulevards and the
sure.
405 freeway?
Yep. At certain points, certainly you forecast for enough growth as you build a site and the radios and components that are to serve that area for the RF objectives sought. But what's the biggest dynamic going on is not so much from a voice increase in voice capacity,
right,
but it's in data. And with your video downstreaming and other text and SMS messaging, that takes a lot of bandwidth, data versus the voice. And as a result, that increase in data usage in a wireless device creates capacity challenges,
right,
for an otherwise, you know,
adequately supplied area.
Correct.
Say something about the relative data carrying capacity of cellular telephone networks and Wi-Fi and WiMAX broadband internet.
Well, there's a interesting dynamic there with the convergence of all communications.
Right.
It's all moving towards a voice over IP in a wireless LAN. And
right,
either that being served in one of four ways, either mobile voice and data, as we know it, either through GSM technology that Singular and T-Mobile have,
right,
or CDMA, which Verizon and Sprint have, or
right,
IDEN, which is Nextel. Or from a Wi-Fi standpoint, which is your 802.11, your unlicensed frequency,
right,
but has a limited amount of coverage area, like 75 to 100 feet.
Right.
And it's typically for indoor hotspots.
Right.
However, Wi-Fi is coming out with what would be, it's called 802.11, 802.22, which is going to be basically a fatter pipe.
Right.
And it will enable outdoor Wi-Fi to bleed outside of the indoor environment.
Will 802.22 provide for a wider a bigger hot spot?
A wider radius?
Yes, a wider
expanded
radius.
Expanded range?
Right.
Not necessarily. What will achieve that is through what they refer to as a mesh network.
And tell us just basically what a mesh network is.
Mesh network is, if you will, a clustering of several antennas
right,
to serve an area that feed off that router, that Wi-Fi router, to supply an expanded coverage beyond, say, 75 to 150 feet
right,
that would otherwise be served. So that mesh network can... It is being trialed in several areas around the country, but it could expand to, you know, be several blocks
right,
radius. But so that's Wi-Fi. The next component is WiMAX. Now that's something that's a couple years out. It's being trialed in as far as how that's going to really work, but it's the motherboard of mobile devices, and it's going to have a range. This is a wireless broadband range
right,
of up to 30 miles coverage radius. So
which,
you can imagine that's
well,
pretty extensive.
I can imagine. That means you could put one up in the Santa Monica Mountains and one in the Santa Susana Mountains and cover the San Fernando Valley, couldn't you?
You could. Now, your radius of how far it will see and propagate is one thing.
Right.
Understand that the capacity that would be required would may drive more, if you will, access points or antennas to be able to handle that amount of
right,
capacity.
Right, so you'd have to essentially space them along the mountain ranges.
Right, but in a large metropolitan city such as L.A., Chicago, New York,
right,
you would probably bring that down to a much lower height. They wouldn't necessarily
right,
be mountain peaks.
Okay.
But in fact,
the San Fernando Valley might be unique in the country, maybe the world, that has a million people in a valley like this. Is that pretty much topographically pretty advantageous?
Yes, it would be. But the typical cell site deployment radius would be more like 3 to 5 miles.
Okay. So you were talking about the various cellular telephony standards and Wi-Fi and WiMAX. Are those? Was there one more?
Well, the other one is just, as we all know, the broadband data, which is DSL.
Right.
Cable and satellite.
Right.
One more point about the WiMAX, really the opportunity there
right,
where a carrier would deploy it is that it, where there isn't a DSL or cable or satellite availability. If it's not already deployed, because it's very costly to deploy DSL or cable line.
You got to dig up the ground one
way
or the other.
So that's why wireless would be, you know, superior to that, and all from the standpoint of its infrastructure cost.
Right, and given that more advantageous infrastructure costs, would it be possible even to put WiMAX into areas already served by DSL and cable and satellite and be competitive and drive the prices down?
It will, but obviously the deployment's going to go in areas where it's not otherwise served.
Right.
So that you almost have, if you will, a monopoly versus a commodity that would be competitive.
Okay.
And one other point I'd say is that on a WiMAX standpoint, it doesn't require a line of sight.
WiMAX doesn't require a line of sight.
No.
Wi-Fi does?
No, Wi-Fi doesn't as much, but once again, you have a much more limited hotspot area.
Right.
When you're talking WiMAX, you're talking about a 30-mile coverage radius, and so it almost blankets the area and it bleeds throughout.
Right. Is there some? Are there synergies involved in combining WiMAX and Wi-Fi?
Well, that's an interesting question. The strategies by, let's say, Verizon and Sprint. Verizon is de-emphasizing Wi-Fi, from my perspective,
right,
as a solution in favor of its EVDO,
right,
a wireless broadband, versus Sprint is seeing Wi-Fi as complementary to EVDO, both of which are on the CDMA platform, and they're pursuing two different strategies, where Singular and T-Mobile, Singular,
yeah,
inclusive of AT&T Wireless as a result of the acquisition,
right,
are obviously they're involved in Wi-Fi right now. They're looking at the expansion of 802.22 from expanded capacity and range, but they're also looking at WiMAX, but that's probably, you know, a couple years off, sure,
right,
if you will.
Okay, it sounds like it's a done deal that wireless broadband is the wave of the future. The question is which of these particular configurations is going to work best in which situation. Is that about it?
Right, and I think it's not going to be the same, and it's not going to be your beta VHF model. There's questions of WiMAX going to swallow Wi-Fi or vice versa.
Right.
That's unknown.
Okay.
And I think the application of the technology is going to be, specific to the return on investment, and that lies to the opportunity, as well as the infrastructure costs in comparison, and the topography.
Okay.
Topography has a huge factor in how a network is deployed.
So essentially, certain technical models may work better in different types of topography.
Sure.
And now, this is all going to be carrying IP traffic, though.
Right.
Will all of these systems be compatible and interlinked, or will
interoperability?
Interoperability, right?
Yes. I mean, that's the goal. I mean, there is the,
because you don't want to have a great system that doesn't go beyond your neighborhood.
That's right. That's the holy grail, where you'll have, you know, a seamless transfer between Wi-Fi and the cellular telephony.
Right.
And to achieve that, to have your voice over IP wireless LAN, the call transfers are contemplated to be completed via what you would call an intelligent media gateways, where essentially the handoff of those calls from being an in-building system Wi-Fi to going outside to a WiMAX to a broadband to your cellular network would have these intelligent media gateways that would accomplish that transfer, and therefore it would be seamless.
Because it seems like in general terms, the two approaches for this, as they are for any technology, is to either say some big authority decrees that everything shall be this way and does it, whether it's a government or a monopoly, or, as seems to be the case here, you have a multiplicity of providers and technologies and topographies and regions, and then the problem becomes getting them to interoperate.
Right.
And where do you see along that continuum being the optimal point?
Mm. If I knew that, you would be referring to me as Macaw or Gates,
right,
in the future.
Okay.
I think that there The crystal ball is cloudy,
right.
No one really knows. There's parallel tracks being pursued.
Right, and we haven't even mentioned the idea of government regulation here, and how that affects any or all of this.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, the Wi-Fi is an unlicensed spectrum.
Right.
But the question there is, it's unlicensed and it's owned by that particular venue.
Right.
And the current motivation for that, of it being unlicensed, and is that it doesn't propagate as far. So you're, you know, 75 to 100 feet is, you know, it's like a home or certainly within an office building or a municipality building. But now when you're talking about, you know, its propagation can go wider, and
right.
through WiMAX,
right.
It can go wider. Now you get, you know, you get into the interference issues of
right.
the cellular telephony network and how all those handoffs will work and spectrum management of it.
Right, and people in a neighborhood, for example, who are one family that's particularly technically adept could start becoming a small service provider for the neighborhood.
Yes.
With the cost of these systems becoming so low compared to what they used to be,
well,
that
yeah.
issues would come up that way that might be interesting. And
I agree, and I think, you know, I had always thought, and this is, you know, years back, that it's soon they'll be giving away voice for free.
Right.
Because the value proposition really is in data, and that's why there's such a heavy focus of that from the evolution of, you know, from what was a CDPD, which was packaged data that was very slow, but at least you could do it, to
right.
Edge, to GPRS now.
Right.
You know, to that's on the GSM platform side, to the CDMA of moving to the EVDO. So it's evolving and very quickly, but the focus clearly is on the data.
Okay, and in fact, in terms of government regulation, the old is new again. The way the Bell system put itself together in around the turn of the 19th to the 20th century,
right.
was by aggregating all the local phone companies, mm-hmm. and then in 84 they were broken up, and now, I mean, it's like a dance that AT&T begat a Pacific Bell, which became Singular, which just merged with AT&T
right.
on the wireless frame. Everyone has sort of spun off a wireless division, which is now eating the landline division, and it's and then last week the FCC said that they're not going to regulate voice over IP very much. Is that what happened?
Currently, I mean, that's their position, and I think what possibly the motivation behind that is that they want the industry to evolve under restricted.
Right.
And then at some point in time they may regulate it, but regulation at this stage would only smother
innovation.
That investment.
Yeah, a little bit like the way internet commerce was encouraged by no taxes on the internet.
Absolutely.
At the same point. And then later on, people start arguing about it again. All right, this is all fascinating and interesting and provides the context and the background in which the mayor's broadband executive panel is going to operate. Tell us a little bit about its organization, and have you had meetings yet? And more broadly, what's the mission of the broadband executive panel?
Well, we haven't met yet. I think the focus has been in assembling the members of this executive panel commission, however you call it.
Right.
And I'm
calling it BEP.
You're calling it what?
BEP. The Broadband Executive Panel.
Hey,
BEP.
I think
BEP.
It'll stick.
And the members
sense.
Will be BEPies, I
they'll
guess.
They'll be BEPies. I know, what I do know is that we have a deliverable sometime in April.
Right.
So working back, I would anticipate that we're going to meet before the end of the year to kind of set a firm agenda and deliverables for what we're trying to do. However, we can certainly take, if you will, judicial notice of what's going on in other cities. And I've been involved in on the national scene on the deployment working with various airports and others around the country, previously with AT&T and now from a financial standpoint with Wireless Capital. So we can look to other cities around the country that are have deployed this, are contemplating it, as well as the vendors and the carriers and the equipment manufacturers that are already in this space and that have modeled both a cost and the efficiency of how a network would be deployed, maybe all at once, grow as you can afford to do it, as that there's interest from the carriers to deploy it.
Right. Now, in fact, Philadelphia set up a commission very similar to yours a few months ago.
Yes.
And have you been in touch with them at all?
No. I have not dealt with Toronto, just their, you know.
I'm sorry, Toronto is doing something similar also?
Their airport in the surrounding area. But
because
Philly has... Yeah. Portland has, New York has they issued an RFP for the various boroughs in Manhattan,
right,
for deployment of outdoor, if you will, DAS, which is distributed antenna systems,
right,
which would deploy current mobile telephony. However, it would be just be an infrastructure stage towards deployment of other technologies, such as an expansion of Wi-Fi or WiMAX deployment or EVDO, etc. What's kind of interesting is that at one time Verizon was looking at taking its payphones,
right,
and they did this in Manhattan,
right,
and light them up from a Wi-Fi standpoint,
right,
and you know, I thought, geez, you know, there's an asset that you can utilize because you have the T1 connections. You know, you can just light it up and people can use it.
Right.
Well, one of the problems has been the interference issue, because here, you know, you're propagating from these payphones and you're interfering with your otherwise Wi-Fi that you would have in the surrounding areas. So they backed off that and they've abandoned that strategy.
It's a little bit like that you're creating invisibly in the air the same kind of mess you've got underneath
right.
New York City
right.
with wires and pipes and cables and so on.
Right.
Is what we were talking about the sort of the free market versus the controlled model, also operative in the case of Portland, Toronto, Philadelphia, Kaska, Minnesota, and Los Angeles in terms of experiments to see which models work, or will there be advantages in essentially having a national clearinghouse so that the people in the cities I just mentioned and in other ones don't have to keep reinventing the wheel, so that what's learned in terms of topography and economics and demography and all those things can be done more efficiently if that would make it more efficient?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the onus is on this commission to one, not do anything myopically,
right?
And leverage, you know, what has been learned, and at the same time, I think it's a very small world when you get down to the carriers and those at those carriers that are focused on this technology and deployment.
You can put them all in one room,
right? You really can, and by getting that consortium of carriers as well as the key vendors, equipment vendor players. That would be something that obviously I will make a recommendation to do, so that they can tell us or validate where we know it,
right.
What's going on.
Exactly.
And I think the designs, I mean, certainly, you know, airport designs that are of in-building systems and Wi-Fi systems, and trials that are being done with EVDO broadband by Verizon and others in different markets, there's a shared knowledge to that. Everyone's trying to drive to a greater and greater efficiency. So to your point of some, you know, national clearinghouse, I think it's driven by obviously the competitiveness of anything that we would do. We'd bid it, and you would have comparable models, if there are any, but from a business standpoint and the design, there's probably no more than 5 variables on the design.
Right.
And on the business model, you know, it's directly in relationship to who's paying for it.
Right. Now, and speaking of who's paying for it, as well as National Clearinghouse, another important player that we haven't mentioned, of course, is the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems obvious, although it's not much publicized, that having a cloud of broadband wireless capability over cities, and then having the firefighters and police and other hazmat teams and so on being able to hook into it, and have that as an essentially a national cloud with compatible standards, if not identical devices, would be a very powerful tool both in Homeland Security as well as all the other applications that we're going to hopefully talk about a little bit before we're finished today.
It's very perceptive. Over right after 9/11, pulled in to work with the TSA and
Transportation Security Administration.
Yes, right. to in the deployment of what their needs were in some strategic public and private venues,
right.
To basically surf off that deployment,
right.
And of permits that we've pulled. To be able to leverage that and from a speed to market of deployment of being operational with the needs, the video and communication needs wirelessly by the TSA, that they could achieve that in their deployment schedule.
In fact, what it's like, it seems to me, is the massive billions that were spent in the 50s and 60s on the national highway system under the rubric of national defense, but which in fact transformed the economy of the whole country because it was a non-information superhighway system. And essentially what we're talking about now is a wireless superhighway that would be able to perform analogously in the information economy the way that highway system served in the material economy.
I agree. The challenges are always with it, you know, for example in the airports where the priority one has been as far as the TSA,
right.
is the coordination effort, because some airports depend upon legacy systems,
right.
depending upon the carriers who are being looked to underwrite this,
right.
They may already be serving that area sufficiently, and therefore any additional capital deployment doesn't make sense, so you can't leverage that opportunity.
Right.
However, you know, there are several instances where you can do that, where the timing works. But I think on going forward, you know, the TSA has broken out and have done a pretty good job in the deployment at the airports of what they need to do to get things done.
And is that essentially a system that's only used by TSA, or can the same system essentially be used by passengers waiting for their overcrowded flights to arrive or leave, and TSA, with TSA using a deeper encryption, or do they have to be separate systems?
Well, if you look at it, it'd be the same backbone,
right?
That would be a passive system, but
right.
then.
Specialized input devices.
Yes, but it would have to be very secure.
Right.
And also the needs of others, such as on the more operational private side of airports.
Right.
The airlines and airport operations.
Or ticket switching. So if it turns out that you're late for your flight at United, assuming they're still in business, and you want to be switched to American, they can all be meshed together so that all of the airlines can be on the same page, the same digital page.
And that's very close.
Yeah.
The TSA, so the security side of the house is probably, you know, it's just going to constantly be evolving. And also the bandwidth of some of the airports, the infrastructure costs is almost prohibitive. And so to do that, you need to have, if you will, unless the TSA and we as the taxpayers want to pay for it, or the airports have the money to do it, which not many do, you need to have a couple carriers interested,
right.
in order to share the proportionate of that capital cost. Because what is happening is that it's prohibitive now because of the capital intensity of deploying these networks,
right.
for any one carrier to do it. And so what has happened over the last, you know, couple years is the consortium of carriers have gotten together with strict antitrust guidelines that the focus is on capital efficiency, nothing other than that, where they can go and deploy and provide coverage and service in a given area that they otherwise couldn't individually, but they can,
right.
collectively.
Right.
And then the marketing folks can, have their own contest on who gets market share.
Right. Now there's already
a commodity.
Right. Now there's already a model for this that's been very successful, and it's the internet, isn't that true?
It certainly is the volume that has really pushed, and the revenue opportunity that has driven these other models. It's just the difference is that with the internet, your deployment and your touch cost
right.
is a lot cheaper than on a wireless side, which is
you mean to hook yourself up. You just need to hook up into the wires
the internet, yes.
to the internet. But essentially, what we're talking about is taking the internet into wireless space spectrum
right.
instead of material.
Right. Well, to create that mobility.
Right.
And to create that mobility, you know, it's not a fixed environment. It's a mobile environment, and so to provide that coverage and capacity, you have an additional cost that is over and above what the internet would have. Although it's cheaper than if you were to try and deploy that from an infrastructure standpoint, like a DSL or cable would have to provide to reach out beyond what is currently the bounds of what a landline otherwise would supply.
The big difference here, both philosophically and practically, it seems to me, is that a wired internet relates to places, and a wireless internet relates to people or dispersed organizations.
Yeah, it more the environment of where they are. But I would say that those lines are already bleeding across, and people, as I'm sure you know, are terminating their landline
right.
phones for mobility phones. And I think as we move further and further in the evolving of the coverage and capacity and the devices that
right.
are driving that, where you don't need to have your landline,
right.
And you're able to get an internet access browser capability, email, you're fine because
right.
you know, unless you're opening up huge picks of data
right.
and pictures and things, you're or you need to model something,
right?
Quite frankly, a BlackBerry or a Trio or other is quite sufficient, and it's evolving. Heck, they're already developing and have developed and testing the software to stream broadcast television
right.
to mobile
receivers. Right.
Yeah.
So in fact, the model of people going off the wired grid by turning off their landline phone and going into the unwired grid
mm-hmm.
and using that for their telephone, the telephone bandwidth requirements are now going to be superseded by up to broadband video requirements,
right.
and the same capability of detethering yourself from a particular location in space will be expanded into these further reaches.
Absolutely, and I, you know, it's not going to be mutually exclusive
right.
because you're going to have needs for those, but you just look at the workplace environment, how
right.
that has changed where having a Wi-Fi router within an office,
right.
it allows you to, you know, take your laptop and gather together and work together, which
right.
has, you know, huge dynamics of efficiency in the workplace.
Right, because it would have been possible to take for 20 people to take their desks and their laptops take their desktops and move them into one room for a 10-minute meeting, but they can all carry their laptops in, and if they're all connected by the local Wi-Fi network, then they've essentially created that working unit for 10 minutes, and then it can disperse again.
It has had great impact on your large architectural design, interior design firms, and how they're designing, you know, space in a workplace environment.
And in fact, the same model that we just talked about here for within one building, the pioneers of nomadic computing who've been in New York or Los Angeles or London or wherever and have been telecommuting or talking back to the home office or talking to each other, when this capacity is created with this wireless cloud, instead of everyone having to congregate at the office, they can be wherever they are and they can congregate electronically with the same functionality or greater functionality because of the bandwidth capacity and data storage facilities, then they can be anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. And not to mention your home.
Yes, not to mention your home and entertainment applications, opportunities. Okay, back from the further reaches to the closer reaches, how about the Department of Water and Power's vastly underutilized fiber optic network? Do you see some important uses for that in whatever LA decides to do?
Certainly, I guess it just comes down to competitively what other dark fibers out there.
Right.
And, light standards are probably a huge opportunity in the utilization of those light standards for deployment of antennas, access points, or robotically snaking fiber through the sewer systems,
right,
which is done in many cities. Absolutely. It's just a question of focus and need.
Because it's really that in the parts where it is, the city's been wired, far beyond Ethernet in those areas, and it's a matter essentially of bringing the traffic into that network.
That's right. And being able to then get it from that underground fiber environment to,
right,
above ground,
right,
to be able to serve those areas that you want. And I think, the objective of the mayor's executive panel is to, bring those reaches into, residential areas that otherwise can't afford,
right,
to have cable or DSL or satellite, if there are any, but there are,
right,
as we know, as well as that could be more efficiently serve the school environment, much,
right,
like the office environment.
Right, exactly.
As well as your public libraries and other more community,
right,
centers.
And in fact, the model that we just focused on in the enterprise is equally applicable to the educational environment from everywhere from kindergarten to postgraduate work.
Absolutely. Because in the university campuses, because, from a carrier standpoint, is, they have to look at their P&L or cash flow,
right,
return on investments,
right,
they have. But if you have, density and usage, you're going to go after those customers and try and serve them.
And okay. Now, yesterday I interviewed the CEO of AirMesh and,
yes,
the VP Marketing of Tropos,
mm-hmm,
and we talked about the trial deployments at the Browdy Constituent Service Center in Van Nuys and Pershing Square. What can you add to what they might have said about that yesterday, and how are what will your panel be looking for in terms of results from those trials, both in terms of technology and usage, that will help inform what you're going to try to do? And will you be talking to them along the way and get some of their preliminary data?
Yeah, absolutely. I would personally, I would want to know, what the traffic,
right,
is, and then what their deployment costs were. So from a modeling standpoint, what are those, how far out are those return on investments that's there?
Right.
And then are there other, strategic benefit that can be leveraged both in the more the commercial side that can maybe help underwrite those costs and maybe expand that capacity.
Like, for example, in the courts there, you sell ads for lawyers and law books that people to underwrite the cost of providing the service for all the participants there in the court system.
Absolutely.
Something along those lines. We've touched on this in peripherally in a number of directions already, but what kind of ownership models might be considered, or will you be considering ownership models in your deliberations for an unwired LA? I've made a short list of possibilities where the DWP would own a lot of what's going on. You'd have a lot of small operators. You'd divide the city up among AirMesh, Verge, Wireless Networks, and a few others at that level. Or I think the most unusual one that I came up with was to let each city council, each neighborhood council, set up itself as a WISP in its own council area and use it for whatever purposes they decided, and use it to raise some money and use it to improve the community and so on. What kind of models are you thinking you might want to consider to facilitate this whole process?
Well, to drive interest, the largeness of the scale is,
right,
going to be more attractive, because then you can balance the opportunity costs,
right,
and the deployment of capital to have these systems put in place.
Right.
So that having said, I think that you'll have a couple models. One will be, from an ownership standpoint of the passive elements, if you will,
right,
which is, the fiber and maybe the infrastructure itself, be it a light standard or whatever. That would be owned by the city, and however that designation would be.
Right.
You would need to have a neutral host player that would be in charge of the operation and maintenance of that network,
right,
as a multi-carrier, multi-technology. And so there'll be a cost that would be associated would be factored in that business model. As far some as kind revenue of sharing,
right?
That would be in, that would how you would allocate that,
right?
You know that that if you can define borders, but you do have some handoff, but you can always do it on a per connection,
right?
Much like how Wi-Fi is now priced in hotspots throughout the country,
right?
It's either priced on a per connection basis, or you buy a bucket, and the origination of where that purchase is gets credit for that usage. But then you have roaming, and you know if you have you know one city council district, you know gets they get the revenue if people are talking in that area or utilizing the network in that area. What happens when they walk across the
right.
border lines?
Right. Does their billing change?
Yeah, their
it's
billing
a different
change.
Rate, and people attract or drive away residents or business people or customers on the basis of how cheaply they're. And if some area says you know 1 cent a minute here and then 2 cents a minute there and so
right.
on.
Right. The back office is daunting.
Right.
And so as much as you can get that back office at high volume
right.
to lower the price point on a per user or per call or per connection basis,
right.
the better. So how that revenue model is shared, I think probably it would have to be in the aggregate, and then as a net, it would be possibly proportionate to originations that would be an allocation, you know, of the different districts based upon that, or it would just be equally divided, you know, based upon the number of access points
right.
in a given district council, et cetera.
Okay, but as a general model, we could go back to the highway system in which the federal government builds them, and I guess I don't know whether the states maintain them or the federal government does, but then the hotels and the restaurants and the tourist attractions that are scattered along the length of the highway are privately owned, and some by chains and some by local area residents and owners and so on. So
mm-hmm. I just, you know, probably the private sector could do it more efficiently, and then you always have the opportunity to competitively bid it, and
right.
And also you have the challenge of evolving technologies and not legacy ones that you know some businesses and municipalities should not be in.
Right. Speaking of different municipalities, what about Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, the city of San Fernando? How do you envision you providing models or gathering information from them as a way of coordinating that? Beverly Hills is right. I mean, it's surrounded by Los Angeles.
Right.
Santa Monica is surrounded by Los Angeles and the Pacific Ocean. Will you envision spreading the gospel to these other places or listening to them, or how is that likely to work?
Well, I'm certainly there'll be a collaborative dialogue, but I think the you know the collaborative discussion and what we would be looking at bringing together that expertise both in carriers and in the equipment vendors that have deployed those networks and have designed them
right.
would be the focus, and I think we would be you know open in the sharing of those findings and if that engages in discussion as to what has been found out by a particular city, we'd be welcome to that. But I think we need to be focused at hand at a volunteer commission as to the objectives of what's trying to be achieved, which are immense. And I think the greatest challenge of all of us on this panel is going to be to focus on what's achievable
right.
and to be able to set a timeline of the strategy for how it's deployed and what are those factors that as we grow it.
Right. Well, speaking for yourself, not the commission, for the board in its entirety, though, you have some estimate of when you think a viable, mostly usable citywide system could be in place if everything goes smoothly in all the different dimensions it has to go smoothly in?
Yes, right. Well, given that, it would be very fast if it ran smoothly, but I think it's probably going to evolve more. You have the fiber there, so it's a question of having it lit up
right.
based upon the demand.
Right.
So you may, you know, if you were to take the you know 20 key areas of the city of Los Angeles, you know, tied into what the objectives of what it's trying to accomplish, and then maybe you do those in clusters.
Right.
And you start with, you know, a first cluster.
Right.
And then evolve into a second one. Is that way, you know, from deployment of capital, how far along it's out there, you're able to measure it, and the risk factor is reduced, and therefore the chances of it working. I would say from a time standpoint is anybody's guess, but if there is the will of the city,
right,
and all its associated departments within it, because
right,
they are their own fiefdoms,
right,
you know, you should be able to have something deployed within, you know, 3 years.
Yes.
That's operational.
2007, 2008 is essentially
I would say that should be a goal, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch one.
Okay. Now, what about the danger that by concentrating on essentially opportunity target rich targets, mm-hmm, either residential with a lot of upper income people who do a lot, you know, want to feed their home theaters, you know, big streams, and business areas, commercial areas with a lot of enterprise traffic, that just as the DSL and the cable has focused on them, and leaving various other areas out in the dark,
mm-hmm,
that the same thing would happen with a deployment strategy for wireless. And what steps do you think that the panel might think about taking in terms of making sure that those areas underserved now won't remain underserved, and more generally, what kind of strategies are you thinking of that will bring this capability to those vast areas that are currently underserved?
Well, certainly you can try and leverage a little quid pro quo of you know, getting the cooperation of the carriers and other vendors,
right,
for consideration of assistance in areas that they need for more their,
right,
their enterprise areas. So I think there's opportunities there where there could be, you know, trade-offs of...
Right. We'll give you an opportunity in this target-rich area if you'll do something out there.
Absolutely.
Where there's less. All right. This is a whole other discussion in itself, but why don't we just cursorily go over what you think the system, when it's in place, let's say 2007-2008, the benefits it's going to bring, which is, of course, the purpose of doing all this in the first place, in particular for e-government, for education, for e-medicine, and telecommuting. Could you just say a little bit about how you envision a deployed system of the kinds we're talking of, the kind we're talking about, how it would pay off in those areas?
Well, I think if you're able to reach, you know, people at a moment's notice,
right, at a broadband, with broadband connectivity,
broadband,
right,
you know, capability,
right,
the benefits are going to go with a balance of the burdens, in that everyone, like on the internet, that can get to you, if
right,
you will,
right,
you know, that's sometimes good, sometimes not,
right,
but you know, I think that the benefits of having a wireless broadband, of what I think the city is trying to achieve, is going to enable those that otherwise would not have the opportunity to be a recipient of and have access to that type of information,
right,
immediate, and it is going to be just, you know, compelling.
And in fact, I think it was Bob Metcalf, the person who invented Ethernet, who said that the value of a network varies as the square of the number of people connected to it.
Yep.
Which, and I'd like to add as my corollary, maybe, multiplied by the bandwidth.
Yes, as the bandwidth is key.
And so, therefore, all right, well, let's talk about those limitless opportunities in some other context. What about telecommuting? If this were in place and all of the advantages that we've just been talking about, essentially the death of distance,
yeah,
as an issue, what that means for maybe coming full circle back to the 405, Wilshire and Olympic,
right,
that are so crowded because people are rushing into their computer terminals downtown or in Woodland Hills or wherever they're going, Century City, they would have the same, they could sit at their desks at home with the same capability, and they'd be just as close to the people, you know, and they can get together once a week if they want to have a party or something.
Right.
But the work could be done in a much more dispersed way in this ebb and flow back and forth across that burns up the energy and the time, and the patience of everybody could be eliminated or at least severely reduced.
Well, I think I'm all for trying to have everybody get off the freeway or
right,
at least limit it.
So right,
certainly the commute time I have. However, I think telecommuting, you know, that pendulum swung and there was, you know, companies that moved to that model as
right.
far as satellite offices
right.
and things like that. And
right.
they found something interesting.
What did they find?
Well, the sales force, for example, was not connected to that company. The loyalty was more
right.
to the client that they were serving.
Huh.
And therefore, the churn rate
right.
of their employee
going
and therefore
to work for the people they were trying to sell. Yeah.
Was going away.
Right.
In addition to the benefits of, you know, the water cooler.
Right.
To having the synergy culturally
right.
of people coming together and having hallway conversations or being able to interface that way
right.
is a huge intangible, but I think it's a very tangible driver of performance and efficiency and results, as well as people want, you know, everybody wants to belong and be a part of something. And I think when you're home and working, certainly we all enjoy doing that,
right.
the moments for that. However, the benefits of what you can learn as well as share
right.
Is extremely valuable, and I don't think it's going that telecommuting will ever be a replacement of, but like everything else, it's going to be an augment and an option that may be available, you know, 1 or 2 days a week. But I think if it, that one day where you come in,
right.
I think you're going to lose that cultural connectivity, that stickiness of,
right.
you know, why would I be with this company versus that company?
Right.
That changes that dynamic, and I don't know if that's going to, certainly we may be driven to that as a result of traffic and the lack of efficiency.
If you just can't get to work.
If you can't get to work. But you know what? You can do it while you're in your car.
Well, up to a point. You want to, you have to, right.
Yeah.
You want to be able to see the road at
right.
least. So, until the cars are automated and
right.
are on RFID'd not to hit each other.
But the advantage in many cases with myself is that in the morning I can get up, I can, you know, I have Wi-Fi at home.
Right.
With things that are coming in that may be more immediate, you know, from New York based on the time zone difference,
right.
I can address, and at
right.
least I get a handle on that, as well as from, you know, having, I have a trio, so I'm able to see what emails are hitting me as I go in.
Right.
So that.
So you're essentially connected at different bandwidths throughout the day.
Absolutely.
And you've set up your schedule and working habits in order to leverage that.
Yeah, I travel a lot. And
right.
one of the great advantages of mobile devices is, boy, as soon as you land, you turn on your device, and I know every email that's coming at me. I know what's going on. I know who to call.
Right.
So I think the telecommuting environment, it exists. It's
right.
important. But I don't think it's going to be a replacement or it's going to be some cultural change.
Okay, well, one last take on that, though. The same network that we've been talking about that can send these massive reports back and forth
mm-hmm.
can also support video conferencing.
Yes.
And who knows what other kind of combination with performance capture from Bob Zemeckis and
yep.
on the long lines of Polar Express, so that, you know, you can get around the what you pretty soon, it seems to me. But if we have the network in by 2007, by 2010, we ought to be able to have virtual water coolers.
Right.
Where not only could you gather around with your colleagues from
right.
your company, other companies, but you could be a green giant if you wanted, or a little molecule, and hang out that way as well.
I agree, and I think that will be a wonderful evolution of how we interface with each other, but it won't replace looking somebody in the eye.
Okay, we'll see. Well, we've had a pretty good conversation without looking each other in the eye here, and I want to thank you for your time and all of your input and all this information, and hopefully as the panel continues its work, we can continue our conversations and educate people about what's going on and what the possibilities are.
I would love to.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
All right, bye.